Okay. Wow. Welcome to the podcast, Moino. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Yes, you are.
Okay. And for everyone listening, I am really excited about this episode because Moino has a story that we spoke about, I think it was last week, that I would love for everyone to hear. I think it's so interesting how he has approached his role that we're going to talk about at a company called Drover. And the funny reason behind this story is that we were connected through a mutual friend of ours called James, who is a rock star, by the way. And even more funny, Drover was pretty much, I think, the first company to use Pleo. So it's a very long-winded circle. But Moino, again, has this amazing story. And on this episode of The Unsung Hero, since he's had a huge role in that company, I'd like to now hand it over to you, Moino. Please tell us, you know, who you are, a little bit about your background, and let's dive into your story a bit.
Cool. Okay. So, hi, guys. I'm Moino. I'm from London. I grew up in I grew up in North London in Camden Town. Lived here all my life, still sort of do. You know, grew up in Camden. My parents are originally from Bangladesh. After finishing school, I took a year out, spent some time in South Africa, then went over to Cambridge for 3 years for university. After coming back, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. There were plans for me to actually go and move to Bangladesh for a bit. And then I stumbled across this role at Drover. And at the beginning, I didn't really like trust the brand. I thought, you know, how could you do hourly private hire rentals? Like, how does that work? They work, you know, the office was a converted fruit and vegetable shop. Didn't know anything about the startup ecosystem. So I was like, hey, I'm happy to hang around for a bit, but I'm not committing to anything. And then things really just took off. And I was like, this is like an amazing company right now. A month or so into my career that I was like, okay, look, do you know what? I need to stick around. This is going great. And that's when I signed the a contract. So there was this joke at Drover that I actually never really had a contract because I sort of just came in for a bit and then didn't leave till 4 years later.
let's kind of zoom in on that experience, because like you said, Bangladesh, but you grew up in London. North Camden, you said?
North London is Camden Town. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm such not a Londoner, so I'm still getting up to speed. But what was it like growing up there, and how did that, you know? I remember when we spoke, coming from Bangladesh, that we're having that background. We spoke about how we kind of had a lot of vibing because I'm kind of from the Caribbean, and growing up a little bit also in the UK. Where was that for you, and how did you find Drover? I think that's always an interesting one for me, how that collided with where your mind was at the time.
Yeah. So first of all, growing up in Camden, I think if you're going to grow up anywhere in London, like, this is like the place to do it. So
nice.
Camden is quite central. You sort of have everything you need around. You've got great universities, British libraries nearby. And quite recently, you've got all these big tech companies now in Camden as well, Facebook, Google, ASOS, and more to be joining soon. So it's a really interesting place to grow up. I can't say that growing up in Camden influenced my decision to work in startups. So it was really just an interesting place to grow up. And there's an awful lot of investment that goes into Camden schools from local universities and businesses to, you know, help us get a better understanding of the options that we have. So that certainly helped me dream a bit, I guess, and go on to better things. How I found Drover was actually quite interesting. So my brother-in-law is an Uber driver, and he asked me to come with him to the Uber office because he had to return, I think it was a phone or PDA device they give you. And then the way Uber works is they have something called a green light hub or onboarding center where all these drivers go and they're like, they sign up, right?
Yeah.
And all the vendors in this space, so those who provide insurance, vehicles, and so on, are all allowed to just, you know, set up shop and trade from there. And I saw this I saw this ad or the for a company where that was renting these vehicles, which I know are very expensive because they're licensed. They're renting these vehicles for like £7 an hour. And I was like, what? This is like super interesting, right? So it turned out to be like a zip car for Uber drivers. And I immediately went up to the desk and started speaking to this chap called Sebastian. And he explained the concept to me. And we sort of exchanged details from there. And that's how I got the intro to the company.
Okay.
Sebastian, then we kept in touch, and he regularly, you know, we kept in touch, and I mentioned that I was available for work. So I did a bit for him here and there, you know, with logistics and operations and so on. And then he brought me in. He goes, why don't you come in full time since you have the availability? I said, I'm happy to do that, but I'm not signing any contracts or anything. So yeah. That's how it happened. I remember just going to the office and thinking, wow, there are 10, 15 people here. This must be a big operation. But actually, the CEO, Felix, had his friends use some of the office space. So I thought the company was a lot bigger when I actually signed up for it than it actually was. So that was
They were really hustling, huh? I remember they were really hustling in the old days. It's like one of those great sort of stories. But actually, for anyone who is listening who doesn't know what Drover does, can you kind of just share a little bit, high level, what exactly is Drover?
So Drover is an online marketplace that connects vehicle suppliers or large fleet owners with customers on a low commitment, a low monthly fee subscription. So we started off in the private hire space. So that's Uber drivers, how Uber drivers access their vehicles. And now it's at a place where it's primarily consumer focused. And a monthly, you know, all inclusive monthly subscription fee for a vehicle.
Okay, cool. Wow. Okay, and then maybe last piece to touch on from the more like, you know, family and pre kind of maybe Drover setup. You know, from a family level, is your family entrepreneurial? Was that kind of a help in terms of what your parents are doing or some of your family members are doing in that space? Did that have any influence at all in your going into this kind of direction, working in startups?
Yeah. So I think it's more of a, not just a family thing, it's a cultural thing. I think Bengalis and South Asians in general prefer to go down the entrepreneurial
route.
There are loads of small business owners, side hustlers in this community. So it was growing up, it was always around me. My dad actually invested a lot of money in his home country, where he acquired large amounts of land and small businesses. So although that's really based over there, and I don't really see any of it, that, you know, it was always in the family, I guess.
It's in the blood. It's in the bloodstream.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No, cool. Okay, awesome. Then let's go to Drover. So for everyone listening, you know, we spoke about your experience with Drover. And I think I felt when we were talking, never have I heard of someone to be such a Swiss Army knife when it comes to, you know, being, I think you mentioned like the first or maximum the second employee, depending on how you kind of contractualize it, right? But I loved how you spoke about the things that you were kind of thrown into, you learned, and you were very, you know, very critical in a lot of these situations as Drover grew. Can we kind of dive into that story a bit? And can you just share what that experience was like for you? And again, since this is the unsung hero, I love the idea of what your role in this growth, you know, was, you know, I believe fairly instrumental in the early days to getting the company moving until it got to that scale where that it becomes a bit more of a machine, right? But we kind of spoke about that. But can we love to zoom in on the Drover story in terms of what you were doing, what you learned, and that impact you felt had on the company?
Yeah. So a great example. So when I left Drover, I was in the insurance team. Which is part of the wider ops team. And pretty much everyone in the company knew me as the person in the insurance team. Now, I have no insurance background, and I still remember the day where I actually started working on the insurance side. So we had our morning stand-up, and we had a notification from our insurer, Havens, saying that we've had 4 accidents. And it was the first time we had that. And then Dan, who was the head of growth at the time, said, Moinu, can you just like handle this? And I made some very expensive mistakes early on, just to admit that. But basically, from that stand-up, I became the insurance guy like 4 years later. Now, that goes back to many different areas as well at Drover. So, you know, it started off, you know, working in logistics, moving the cars around, making sure that they get to our drivers on time. We did some onboarding to begin with, some supplier onboarding as well. And then it really, anything that needed to be done, we had to do it. It wasn't just me, of course, the first 10, 15 employees, we had to be the Swiss Army knife, right? We had to be able to do every single role. And later down the line, it did become this machine. So roles that I had at the beginning stage, you know, that maybe took up a few hours of my time every week, now have departments, like compliance is one of them. There's a big claims team now. You know, small things that we had to do, I'm now part of the machine later down the line, which is quite interesting to reflect on, I think.
Do you think then it was your early experiences touching on so many different spaces, which then kind of enabled, I guess, leadership at Drover to see, hey, this is an area that we need to invest in? And on that point, which of those areas did you enjoy the most? Like, which was the most amazing experience for you to grow yourself? I'm actually kind of curious about that one myself.
Yeah. So I think with all startups, right, you can't prepare for everything going in. If we try to figure out every scenario, there would be no startups, right? So everything is a learning experience. And I think it was always a challenge I enjoyed, right? If something was new, a new problem, like, you know, if you know, one of our suppliers were unhappy with the way we settled a claim, or, you know, we signed up with a new insurer and had to be a regulated company for the first time. Working on those new problems was always like an interest of mine. And after you've experienced something and you know that it is very likely repeat itself, that's when you start building the infrastructure so that it can be part of the machine. And for me, if there's any area where I really like enjoyed, I would say it would be just the process of identifying a problem for the first time, investigating it, knowing that this was going to be something that occurs regularly or is a risk to the business, and then implementing a process or some sort of partnership, I guess, to prevent it from happening again in the future, or making it part of the machine. So if I could use an example, you know, we had a situation where we had some vehicles going missing, very expensive vehicles, and we realized there was a risk in that part of the business. So what we did was immediately build the infrastructure to prevent that from happening and protect our suppliers. And something like that is the chance of something like that happening again, very low. But it's that process of learning that I really enjoyed.
And what was the team like around you in the early days? I'm guessing, of course, it evolved with time and as the company scaled, because I remember you guys grew really fast at one point, if I'm not mistaken. But what was the team like around you? Which did that give you the platform to be as you were, or were you just kind of grabbing things that you thought you needed to grab?
Yeah, so I think Felix and Dan, who were like the co-founders, they made some really good hires. At the you know, the first 10, 15 employees were like, we made some really strong hires there. I mean, all hires that we made were strong, but I give you an example. So I was on holiday in May 2016 or something, and then when I came back, I found out that we've made two hires. A chap called Matt Corder, who's an ex-consultant, and then Parrot Patel, who, you know, Parrot and I onboarded Pleo at the very beginning. And that's because of their background and their credentials, just and how great they were. I knew at that point, like, you know, this is something we're investing heavily in, right? Just bringing in that top talent. And having those guys was really helpful in actually helping me become more of a professional, because I came in straight from uni pretty much and was just grabbing things, right? Like you mentioned. And bringing those guys in who had, 3-4 years work experience in the corporate environment really helped formalize a lot of the process. We're still that scrappy startup, don't get me wrong, but having those guys come in definitely helped us get to that point where, we can start building that startup machine.
Nice. And I'll come back to the growth in a second, but maybe on that point with the amazing people coming in, when you were at Drover, through your experience, did you have, and I've asked a few people on the podcast this question, was there one, maybe two specific people who you really looked up to, who were like your mentors, who were really instrumental, you felt, in your development at Drover? Or if you had someone externally that was super important to you that helped you either focus or zoom in on areas that you needed to develop and also become maybe more well-rounded as an employee?
Yeah, I think, yeah, there's certainly two people spring to mind when you mentioned that question. First being, of course, the CEO, Felix. I think what I really admire about him is like his confidence, right? This is a guy who can, he's brilliant at executing, and he likes to give people responsibility. So, in the beginning, when all these random tasks were thrown at me with very little experience, he's the guy's like, yeah, of course you can do it. Like, just go for it. This is, you have to just get on, execute, and then you can see the results, right? And that sort of stuck with me. So he was a great influencer in me being able to just go, just pick up a task and run with it, because that's what he does, right? So learning that part of learning that skill from him was super important. Another chap that springs to mind as well is Matt, who's still in the company now, I believe. And for Matt and I would always argue about things, right? We'd always challenge each other, and but somehow we found a way to work, and we worked together for me, I think 3.5 years or so. And again, that was a great experience for me because he gave me the confidence to be, challenge when required, and also learn when I'm personally being challenged as well. So these are skills that I've developed with these people that I still have today.
Okay, that's awesome. That's super awesome. And then as we go through Drover, and then when you eventually left, you were there for 3.5 years, right?
Almost 4 years, 3 years, 11 months.
Wow, that's insane. That's awesome. But how did that end? How did you get to that point where it's time to leave? And what was that piece of the journey like? And I'm asking because, I left Plio and I loved that early startup feeling. And that's why now I'm at CapDesk, and there's this energy, there's a different mentality, there's a different sense of urgency around the culture, the values that, really are very strong when you're, 20 people going to 100. And I've realized that's where I like to play ball, and that's where I like to be involved. When it gets a bit larger, at least me being a very faithful startup person, that's where I start to lose a bit of interest, because it's a different type of culture needed. Values can stay the same, but the culture in terms of work ethic and, focus and not being a generalist anymore, becoming much more specialist, becomes super strong, which is needed for the growth. What happened with you, and where was that journey for you as you got middle to end at Drover?
So for me, the process, I think it was about a year where I was like trying to figure out where I fit into the company now that we've sort of become this machine. And upon reflection after leaving in January, it was quite clear that when I first had my doubts, which was like end of 2018, that's when I should have pulled the trigger, because that was, for me, that was the end of the scrappy startup stage, and there was no need for generalists anymore. It was more, okay, now everyone has their own specific roles. And just like you, and I think we discussed this last week, I think I belong in the early stage startup, or it doesn't necessarily need to be sub 20 people. It could be an early project within a larger startup, right? So something where I can really get my hands into and experiment with new ideas. That's where I really really feel like I thrive. So in terms of actually figuring out when would have been the right time, I think leaving just you know, end of 2018, 2019 would have been better. That last year, I feel like I wasn't in a I wasn't in a position where I felt like I belonged in a certain area in the business. But I, you know, I did work on various projects. It was just a matter of like trying to figure out where I fit in.
But I'd love to zoom in on this topic. Because I have a lot of thoughts here that I'd like to, you know, get your feedback on, and I'm sure you can push me around. That whole that, and I'm so confident so many people who are listening to this right now may be at a similar stage. Do I stay in my company or do I leave? I've been here for 2 years, you know, I've grown for a few years. I'm starting now to question, should I stay? Should I look at new opportunities? You know, recruiters are reaching out to me. The grass is always greener on the other side. Let's talk about that process. Can you go a bit deeper on, you know, you mentioned, you know, you should have maybe left a year before and that kind of stuff. What was going through your head, honestly?
Yeah.
What was challenging you the most? Was it the culture? Was it just the work? Was it moving around too much, not owning something and feeling like you were growing and developing yourself?
Yeah. So for me, I felt like I wasn't learning as fast as I was before. Of course, there's the process of learning continues, but the pace changes, right? So for me, I wasn't at a stage where I was taking on new tasks and working on new projects, where you're putting myself in a situation where I need to learn fast. So that was a bit difficult for me, because the work just became steady, I guess. And it became more of a just like, this is your role, right? That was really, that was the part that actually started to bring those doubts to mind. Hey, shall I move on? Shall I stay? I guess what sort of slowed me down or prevented me from pulling that trigger was that, you know, I was part of the journey from the very beginning. So letting go was really difficult. And, you know, I guess I only speak myself here. For me, being part of the being there from the beginning, it was hard to let go. And some of the changes that were made in the business, like direction, I didn't agree with. And again, that was a really difficult process for me, because I feel like something I helped create is being changed beyond recognition, right? And yeah, that was, I think, it's quite, yeah, the part where I start to doubt whether I should stay. That's really due to the work becoming steady and not being challenging anymore. But what really made me really slow down the process was actually trying to you know, cling onto something that you know, that I was part of for almost 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to go deeper on my side with that. And I think the emotional piece is so underrated in terms of the impact on decision-making. I mean, you came out of uni, you almost went straight into Drover. So, you know, in theory, it's like your first proper job. You know, you have this emotional thing where you were the first, second employee. It's kind of like your baby, even though it's not your company. And I think for me with Pleo, and I am most attached to Pleo because it was such a journey for me. You know, it wasn't my first job, so I'd been through a few, but there was this insane emotional connection to the work and how that overlapped with personal life, which reflecting back on, and the reason why I want to zoom in on this is, you know, what were the lessons that were painful to learn? Because in the end of the day, I think as an employee, I really want to echo, and we actually spoke about this before, and that's how James actually ended up connecting us. You know, what are you building on the side? You know, what is your personal brand? You know, what's going to happen the day when that breakup, so to speak, happens? And it will happen, and it should happen. And I think it's more that situation where, God, you know, I'm here, but I don't know where else to go. I don't want to leave this company because I love it and I want to see through the journey to going, you know, public, whatever it might be. But then it's super critical on yourself to be like, is this the growth that I need? Is this where I'm developing and learning? And it's a difficult one to go deep on because it's so specific to individuals. Like, for example, and it, maybe you can share a bit more about your perspective, but I think I've mentioned before, I have no debts, no student loans. I don't have a wife. I don't have kids. I don't have anything that's holding me. And when you are in that position, it's very personal, but I want to just go. I want to just do everything I can to learn while I have the opportunity. And albeit, you know, say privilege, and it is a privilege to take that opportunity. What about you? Was that similar? Did you just didn't feel like many things were at risk? And that's why you could take these bold statements to jump out and find something new or move on?
I think for me, I'm in a similar situation to you, I guess, that I didn't really, of course, everyone needs a job, but at the same time, I could have afforded to, you know, even leave without having another job lined up. And it was less to do with like the security of the job. It was more to do with, do I want, you know, am I ready to leave here? And I was here from the start. Perhaps I can, you know, fix some of these issues, and perhaps I can take on more responsibility. So it was, I think it was, for me, the emotional side of it was a big factor, and less to do with that job security side, because I was confident I would find another role pretty quickly. And I also was confident that if I didn't find another role, that I would be okay for a certain period of time. So it was really just being emotionally like ready to be like, okay, this is like the end of the journey for me here. And I am now going to move on to something different. That was the difficult part for me. Now, I think this also applies to a lot of other people. Not just at Drover, but I think in startups in general, especially those who join in quite early in the journey, it's, you know, figuring there's this expectation that I've given so much of my time into this business and growing it.
Yeah.
To a point where, hey, you know, you feel like I've invested so much, just leaving now would put all of that to waste. But when that clicked with me, that actually that's not the case. You know, I've made my contribution. I am actually just here discussing my contribution to Drover right now. If I move, that contribution is still there, right? If you some of these teams that exist, if you go back, right, and figure out where like it initially comes from, like there's some of my input is there. And just having that way of thinking, like, hey, I've made a great contribution. Now it's time for me to move on and do it elsewhere, and not having that attachment, I guess. Has really made it easy for me to move on. And I think it's something that will stick. I don't think I'll make the same mistake again. I wouldn't just stick around in another startup when I get to a point where I feel like I've made my contribution.
Yeah, but you bring up a really interesting point for me, and it's the topic of entitlement. So, you know, you come into a company, you feel you've had a massive impact, which is subjective, right? You know, you might think as an early employee, I'm kicking my butt in. I'm doing everything I can. I'm working long hours. I'm delivering results. Where's my recognition? And I think that's a dangerous thing, right? Especially in those early people, because then you get 2 years down the line, you know, they still have that mindset, you know, what's my impact? You know, I want my recognition. Maybe some people are much more humble about it, but there still is this element of like in the olden days, you know, I was having a massive impact and I was being recognized because the company could see it. When you get a bit bigger, you know, more of a machine-like process, then that value is distributed across more people. So it's not necessarily focused on one person's effort. It should be focused on team effort, right? What do you think of that in terms of the early employees that, and this is where I honestly think some of the early employees that are maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the line, it's okay to leave. Like, you know, you've made your impact. You've had that amazing piece that you've learned from, you've given back, you know, in all honesty and all respect, get out, like, and do it again, do it for your own venture, do it for someone else and see if you can do it again or do it differently, better, and maybe then be a bit smarter, as we've joked about, in terms of equity and making sure you're getting a good chunk of the cake and in a respectful way when you've learned your lessons. What do you think of that?
Well, I think this is actually not the first time I've had this conversation. Even, you know, I mentioned earlier, someone I admire and I learned a lot from, I drove, was this founder and the CEO, Felix. And he said to me a few times, you know, 2 years or so is the amount of time someone should spend in a company. Because really in that 2 years, you've either made your impact or not, and it's time to now move on. Now, if I took that advice early on, you know, it would have been a different situation for me. So I absolutely agree. There's a certain amount of time where you make your contribution and then things start to steady and you're not learning as fast as anymore. Now, for me, I didn't feel like I was entitled to anything. And part of me also knew that this wasn't my company. I just had a very small stake in it. And it still comes back to remember, because we built it from pretty much the ground up and we had a great team around us. So it was also part of me didn't want to leave the community we built. We had a really awesome team. We grew to about, I think, 160 people or so. I feel like there is that trap, though. You can fall in the trap of, hey, I was here from the start. I deserve X, Y, and Z, or where's my recognition? But that wasn't the reason that I feel like that wasn't something that I expected. You know, I knew there would be points where you have to actually bring in expertise to continue the journey, because ultimately, as early employees, maturing like that will benefit us, right? So I always had that mentality. So for me, it wasn't like, hey, I've been here longer, I should therefore be promoted to this title and this status and this pay. Of course, I couldn't, I asked for what was fair and oftentimes got it, but I never said, hey, I was there from the beginning, therefore I deserve some level of recognition for that.
Cool. Amazing. I think we're kind of running out of time. So let's kind of zoom into a close. And I would love for you now, if you can quickly reflect, anyone listening who has joined an early startup as one of those first employees who's maybe had one or two rodeos before going back and doing it again as an unsung potential hero, what advice would you give? You know, maybe one point, it can be as generic or as very specific as you like, on what your experience has been to kind of go through that process. I'd love to hear it, and I'd love to, if you could share, because you've gone through it now, you were the first employee, you kind of left. Anything specific that you reflected on which would be super valuable to share?
So I think it depends on your personal circumstances. So I was an early employee, but I also had no experience, right? So if I was an early employee at, say CapDesk right now, I would say, hey, I've got 4 years of experience. So my experience as an early stage employee will differ. So if you're like me, and joining with very little or no experience, then I would say, just because you're an early stage employee, don't think you can start demanding certain levels of recognition or pay or equity and so on. This is your opportunity to learn and take everything on board, right? That all the reward will come later. You're investing in yourself now, and the company is doing is taking a huge risk by bringing you in at an early stage where when you have no experience. So if you're one of those fortunate people like me who can get in at an early stage company with no experience, just take every opportunity you have, and don't start. Don't think that immediately entitles you to a certain level of seniority and pay. Just take every opportunity you have. Now, if you're someone with experience and are going to be critical to that startup growing and getting getting through to the next round of funding, I think that's your opportunity to really sell yourself, and I would say, based on your contribution, you should be in a good negotiating place. But at the same time, I think for me, one of the values of early stage startups is the fact that you can learn so much and you're exposed to so many different things. So always take into consideration the benefit of being in an environment where you're learning rapidly and you're taking on new challenges, because that experience is going to give you value later on. So always bear that in mind, because that itself has some value as well. So I think for me, that's what I'm really looking at right now. And of course, going forward, is what kind of value am I getting from this new role, aside from the financial side of things?
Wow, that was super spot on. Loved it. That is definitely, people rewind that back and listen again. That was great advice. I really liked it. Hey, this was amazing. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, and love your story. And I know we didn't talk about everything on this podcast, but anyone listening, check this guy out. He's got a cool story, and I'm really excited for you, buddy. Like, I'm keen to see where you end up in the future and what projects you kind of get your hands on. But yeah, for sure. But super huge thanks from me.
Thank you for having me. And also, thank you to James for making the...
James, if you're listening, you magically made this one happen. Thank you.
He needs to be. If he's not listening, I'm going to be really disappointed. But yeah, James, thank you. And Hakan, thank you so much as well for having me.
Amazing. Cheers, buddy. We'll be right back.